Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers on the broadcast today. Rory McShane joins us. He's a political consultant on the Republican side. He's here for the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Hello, is this D&D Roofing?
Yes, it is. How may I help you?
You did such a great job on my roof. May I speak to the owner?
I am an owner.
Oh, can I speak to your supervisor?
Sure.
How may I help you?
I love your work. May I speak to the owner?
I am an owner. We're all owners. Well, that's why at D&D we work so hard to keep your home safe and sound.
Oh, no wonder.
D&D Roofing and Sheet Metal. Local, employee-owned, here for you.
Retail's impact on Nevada's economy? Enormous. 8,600 businesses, large and small, employing 145,000 workers. And last fiscal year, retail paid tax on nearly $60 billion in sales. We're the Retail Association of Nevada. We support retail, we help it grow, and we mean business.
RANNV.org.
Truck drivers are some of the hardest working people you'll meet, delivering over 70% of America's freight and 92% of Nevada's. When there's a natural disaster, they're delivering critical supplies to help those communities recover and rebuild. Every sector of the economy and our nation's military rely on truck drivers. So let's take a moment to say thank you. On the open road or city streets, our truck drivers are rolling to make our economy and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan on No Holds Barred Political Forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're pleased to welcome for the first time to the program Rory McShane. He's the CEO of McShane LLC. Pleasure to have you on the program, sir.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it a lot.
For those that may not be aware of you and your firm, please just give us a little background.
Sure. So we're a political and media consulting firm based in Las Vegas and D.C. Our main operation, our main office is in Las Vegas. I personally split my time between D.C. and Vegas. Operated in Nevada for a while, spent a few years at Red Rock Strategies, then down in Texas for a while at Harris Media. And we launched as a firm about 3 years ago. You know, we're proud to say that between the principals at our firm, we've worked in like 40 states. The last election cycle, we were part of 22 victories across the country. So very exciting stuff.
And one of the campaigns you've worked on across the country is Marcy's Law, which passed in Nevada.
That's correct. So when I was at Red Rock Strategies, we did a lot on Marcy's Law. I was part of the team that passed in Montana, North Dakota, and South Dakota, and then worked on, in the time it was getting it through the legislature for ballot access, worked on that, worked on Hawaii, Marcy's Law in Hawaii, and a number of other states. And it was a huge honor to work on such an important issue for our state and for the nation.
Let's talk about, because we're taping this the day after the debate last night in South Carolina. What were your thoughts on the debate?
So if you look at the numbers, Sanders has clearly achieved frontrunner status, and with frontrunner status comes, you got to take down the frontrunner, right? But I don't think he's been phased, and I think that he emerges stronger. And so a poll came out today that had him at 23 to Biden's 27 in South Carolina. And if Biden is not able to hold this South Carolina firewall, which has been the whole logic to why he's still in this race, then he'll probably have to drop out. I don't see how he can raise the money to continue after that.
As you look at the other candidates and the amount of money being spent, Tom Steyer, for example, a ton of money in Nevada, not much in the way of results. Now Mayor Bloomberg, spending an unbelievable amount of money. Wouldn't we all love to have that account? especially if you're on commission. But we've seen Sheldon Adelson, for example, over the last few cycles, has spent hundreds of millions of dollars. But not necessarily when supporting candidates, really achieving the goals. Newt Gingrich would be probably the best example, 10 million, zip. So what are your thoughts about this amount of money that's going into the campaigns, and do you think it really will have an effect in the long run?
So that's a great question. You know, as much as, I say this all the time, as much as I think, you know, I like to think, maybe not true, but you know, people who do what I do is important, and shaping message and shaping strategy is important, no amount of money or consultants can buy authenticity. I gave an interview to Vox about this last week, right? So Bloomberg is paying people $2,500 a month right now to share his memes on Instagram, right? To hopefully achieve achieve a fraction of the viral sensation that Bernie Sanders has achieved, but it's just not authentic, right? You know, he was a Republican, and then he was, you know, and then he was an independent, and now he's a Democrat. And you know, when he was thinking about running, you know, before as a Republican, he was moving to the right. Now he's moving to the left, and no amount of money can buy authenticity, and voters read authenticity. And I think that is largely how Donald Trump became our president. I think why Bernie Sanders is on the path to the Democratic nomination. As much as, you know, I think Bernie Sanders is insane, I think he's authentic, and I think he believes what he says, and I think he has, to his credit, the backbone to stand up for that. And I think, by and large, great story in American politics, right? 2004 election, Kerry versus Bush. Top polling issues are jobs, healthcare, oil, and security. When polled their positions on every one of those issues, voters preferred John Kerry's positions on jobs, healthcare, oil, and security to George Bush's. Who won the election? George Bush, because he was authentic. People believed in him, and they trusted him. And no amount of money can overcome that.
I think also Kerry's problem was that there was a disconnect between his personality and the general public, that they did not have the ability to see that John Kerry as somebody that they could even talk to.
There was a disconnect between his personality and anyone who breathed oxygen. I
mean, that was, you know. It's a little tough, but okay.
Yeah. I mean, you had someone who, you know, was from, you know, Brookline, Massachusetts, eating quiche out of the can, and, you know, just did not connect with Midwestern Rust Belt voters in any way, didn't connect with Hispanic voters, didn't connect with, I mean, several of the key elements that the Democrats need in a coalition to win.
So when you look at President Trump, he also had the same background, mm-hmm. you know, started out life as a Democrat, mm-hmm. and then ends up as a Republican. But he tapped into this base of need in the country for all politicians say all this stuff, but they never do it. Here's a guy that's saying all the things that we agree with. He may not be traditional in the sense of a regular politician, but we know him from The Apprentice, which shows that there's nothing wrong with being on television for 20 years. So, you know, was that authenticity or just a really great act?
So Trump has always been a populist, right? Like you read his positions on trade going back to the late 80s and early 90s, he's always become a populist. What has happened in the 20 years since then is the Republican Party has become more of a populist party. You see now that Republicans are winning the Rust Belt, right, which used to be pretty solidly Democratic territory. I was on a conference call the other day, and we were talking about the possibility that Republicans will win Minnesota, right, which is, you know, I think 84 was probably the last time that happened. But you look at declining numbers of Democratic farm labor registrations out there, increasing numbers of Union Democrats voting Republican. The Republican Party has become more populist, and Donald Trump was just positioned correctly at the apex of that. He didn't change any positions. The mountain just came to Muhammad, if you will.
And, you know, you bring up an interesting point. I recently had the opportunity to watch a 30-year-old program of all people, Joan Rivers, mm-hmm. When she had an afternoon daytime talk show, hour-long program, 1990, and who's her guest for the full hour? Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. At the time, he had Trump hair, he had the Taj Mahal, he had the Plaza. He was with Marla Maples, just gotten divorced from Ivana, and Don Jr., he was saying, was old enough to be upset about the divorce. The younger kids were not. He was younger, more attractive, softer in his delivery, but the issues were the same. Mm-hmm. They were exact 30 mm-hmm. years, man. Mm-hmm. I don't think that most people realize that Donald Trump has held these positions, even though the New York Times wrote, you know, a couple of years ago that Trump had wanted to be initially governor of New York State and then move on to the presidency, and has had that thought in the back of his mind for decades. On this interview, he said that he was not interested in running for office, but the positions on trade, Middle East, you know, wars, endless wars, all exactly the same.
He's a long-standing populist. It's absolutely true. And now we're in a place where, really, I think you could argue that the predominance in both political parties is now populism. I mean, I think that the Bernie Sanders type of populism is probably an ugly type of populism, in my opinion. I'm sure some would disagree with that. But the predominant governing philosophy right now in both parties is populism, and that's a position Donald Trump has held for a long, long time.
You said you thought Bernie Sanders' positions were insane. What's your definition of insanity?
Position, I mean, socialism on the global scale has caused two things. I mean, one, you look at socialism from its efficacy, right? From the results that have ensued from it. Venezuela, you know, South American countries, it has never been effective in large scale, right? But then you look at it from a purely moral perspective. If you believe the thoughts that are in your head are your own property, then you have the right to invent something or paint a beautiful painting or write a piece of music, and you alone get to decide that this painting is something I'm going to sell, or it's something I'm going to hang in my home. This piece of music is something I'm going to make available to everyone for free, or it's something I'm going to record on a CD and sell those CDs. We put people in jail for stealing intellectual property, but Mr. Sanders believes the government has the right to steal your intellectual property and take the profit from that to fund those who did not create it. So it is essentially the argument that the product of your own mind is not your own, that your own thoughts do not reside wholly within you. And I personally believe that that's a right that comes, I believe that's a right that comes from God.
But that's not something that you can put in a 30-second campaign commercial.
Or a 140-character tweet, unfortunately.
Correct. And I would also pose it that when questioned on this, he points to the Nordic countries, mm-hmm. Norway, Denmark, etc., to point out, you know, their socialism,
yep.
Is different from what you're describing. But the other side of that is that those people give up a huge portion of their income towards the government to fund all of these different activities.
Well, but they're also not socialist countries, right? So a socialist country is defined that the state owns the means of production, right? Though those countries have very large tax rates, the states do not own the means of production there. Secondly, in the late 1930s and early 1940s, there were a whole lot of Nazi flags in those countries because NATO was not in prominence yet, and because there was no alliance of nations predominantly funded by the United States to defend those countries. It's really, really easy. You know, roughly just under half of our entire budget is spent on national defense, and a large part of that is protecting our allies in Europe, and or at least being prepared to protect our allies in Europe. When you don't have the burden of defending yourself and you get to rely on someone else to do that, that allows more of your spending to be spent on social programs.
It's also so difficult for anybody to run against this economy. Now, obviously, mm-hmm. you are not seeing the Democrats in these debates standing up and saying what a terrible economy we have. Mm-hmm. At this point, it appears that the president has a much easier path to go down because of the economy obviously we have a huge block of people in this country that's pretty close to being 50-50 that love Trump or hate Trump. And whether you love him or hate him, he said a lot of things going into this thing, and he has come true on the majority of those things.
Yeah, so I mean, there's an analogy in competitive politics called the national mommy versus daddy, right? When voters want someone to defend the country and be tough and strong and law and order, they vote Republican, the national daddy. When they want health care and jobs and programs, they vote Democratic, the national mommy, right? But we're in the best economy ever. African American unemployment is the lowest it's ever been. Youth unemployment's the lowest it's ever been. Hispanic unemployment's the lowest it's ever been. And similarly, I would argue that our national presence is the best that it's been in a long time, our international presence or in strength is the best that it's been in a long time. So I think the president has checked both of those boxes, which really leaves the question to the Democratic candidates, what are they going to make their argument out? I mean, really, their argument is essentially the guy's mean on Twitter, right? Okay, but fair, but I don't think you can win a national election that way.
All right, let's take a break. More with Rory McShane. We'll get you out of your shell here in just a minute, right after this.
Tamarack Junction is South Reno's hotspot with over 450 of the latest slots and video games. Sully Sports Bar, the Dining Car Restaurant, William Hill Sportsbook, and the Tamarack Steakhouse and Lounge. We're just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia. Yeah.
Because of UMC, there's a wide open road ahead of me.
Because of UMC, she can grow up with her twin sister.
Because of UMC, I'm here to help you.
UMC, the highest level of care in Nevada.
Hi, I'm Eric Robnett, owner of Home Energy Experts. Has this ever happened to you?
Honey, did you remember to turn down the thermostat?
Forgetting to set the temperature? Not fun. We can help. Our new smart thermostat keeps the temperature set for your comfort all by itself.
I'm feeling hot now.
To increase your comfort, go to homeenergyexperts.com for details. That's homeenergyexperts.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
The Tamarack Junction Steakhouse is known for signature steaks, handcrafted cocktails, and world-class wines. Join us Thursdays and Friday nights from 4:30 to 6:30 in the Steakhouse Lounge for live music, gourmet plates, and well-priced wines just north of the Summit Mall on South Virginia.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Rory McShane. He's the CEO of McShane LLC, a Republican political advocacy group. So let's talk about some of the issues that the president deals with. Mm-hmm. And a reference point to me would be Jim Gibbons, okay, who was a conservative governor, and he got quite a bit of support initially from people like Sheldon Adelson and other, Sig Rogich and others on the Republican side. But he believed in no new taxes. He believed in certain philosophies about politics. And those are not of the mainstream. They are not of the lobbyists, because the lobbyists couldn't go and change his mind on most of the issues that they would normally be able to change a governor's mind on. Donald Trump is the same way, that he has a philosophy and it doesn't work well in the Congress. It doesn't, work well with the lobbying corps in Washington, D.C., and it certainly doesn't work in the halls of government. And so what people refer to in quotes as the deep state are not happy to have somebody like President Trump. So your thoughts on that?
So,
is that a fair comparison, no, Jim Gibbons
well,
to a Donald Trump? In
I would disagree with that, because I would argue that Jim Gibbons, rightly or wrongly, there were some issues that prevented Jim Gibbons' electoral success beyond his conservative policy positions.
You're talking about his private life?
Yes, I am.
But I mean, President Trump had a similar situation.
Sure, but multiplied by
10.
Well, yeah, but separated by a decade and a half when American culture is much different, right? I don't know if those things came out today, if they would do a sitting governor as much damage. Gavin Newsom is the governor of California right now. So I don't know. I'm just saying that I don't think it's an apt comparison.
Can I just throw in a quick caveat here? Governor Sandoval had a bunch of personal issues, and I don't want to go into them, and it's none of my business, nobody's business. But the media did not jump on Governor Sandoval and go searching the way that they did with Jim Gibbons, because Governor Sandoval was part of the mainstream and Jim Gibbons was not.
It's a well-made point. But I the media jumped all over Gavin Newsom in California. There's some similar issues there. And then Gavin Newsom was, much to my chagrin, and the chagrin of everyone who can balance a checkbook, was very popularly, very widely elected the governor of California and enjoys very large support as governor of California, right? I think where we are culturally as a country is different than it was then. Right or wrong or indifferent, I just think that's the case. And I think the degree to which those issues move voters and to which people care about them, at the end of the day, you can argue the media is liberal or not, and there's arguments to make on both sides. At the end of the day, what copy desk reporters are most concerned with is what's going to get clicks and views and shares and subscribers, right? And I think that at that time, it was more likely to get those things than it is now. As a culture, we become somewhat desensitized to those kind of issues.
I'm not sure I agree with you there, because I think that today, even more so because of the growth of social media, that anything can be picked up on and pushed. And in fact, as you well know, because in some ways you're part of this, that's your job, is to get all these issues out there and into the social media world and to cultivate journalists. And if it weren't for politics, what, 90% of the newspapers in this country would be bankrupt? 90% of the television stations in this country would be bankrupt?
Absolutely, but I think we're actually saying the same thing in a different way. The rise of social media is what has anesthetized society to this, right? The rise, the fact that there are 10 times as many scandals as there used to be, simply because everybody has a camera and a recorder in their pocket, and there's 10 times as many opportunities for scandal. I'll give you a great example. Pennsylvania State Senator Wagner was running for governor, and when I came up in politics, when I was a field guy, campaign manager, the rule was, you when a tracker shows up, you never touch them, you never engage in them, you stay as far away and be as polite as possible if you have to, right? And he shoved.
And just for a quick moment, this is somebody who the opposite campaign sends to.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah. The opposite campaign sends to film and track. So a Republican candidate running for governor of Pennsylvania, opposite campaign is sent a tracker, right? And he shoves the guy, which at one point in the early days of my career would have been the end of someone's campaign for governor, right? And he turned that into his best fundraising day ever. Similarly, governor of Montana, Greg Gianforte, the famous reporter body slammer, right? At one point in the early days of my career, that would have been the end of somebody's political career. And he turned that into a massive fundraising haul. We are just much more anesthetized to what is described as political scandal than I think we ever have been in American politics.
All right, let's take one more break and we'll be right back.
Dimitri Prine here for Design Outdoor. Are you a homeowner who's interested in remodeling or building a home? At Design Outdoor, we can show you how adding natural or manufactured masonry stone can add beauty and value to your home. And we refer only the best contractors. Our store and backyard are located at 11600 South Virginia, just north of DeMonte Ranch Parkway. Visit designoutdoor.com or call us at 851-9499.
Hey guys, are you watching the game at a friend's or the bar again because you can't watch at home with your wife? Or worse, because she kicked you out and kept your couch, your flat screen, and your kids? What's the one thing a man needs when he loses a good woman? A good lawyer. And when he loses a bad woman, he needs a great lawyer. What makes a good woman a bad woman? You tell me. You're the one that can't watch the game in your own home. I'm men's rights attorney Marilyn York, and I represent men in divorce, custody, and family law matters.
Hi, I'm Dave Newman. Remember me? I used to be the house detective, and now I'm a realtor, full-time at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates. A lot of people ask me, how's the market? You know what? It's fantastic. If you're even kicking around the idea of buying or selling, give me a call. Let's talk about it. Call me at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates and just ask for the guy who used to be the house detective, Dave Newman.
Everyone is talking about opioids, but they're not the only drugs that can be harmful if taken in large quantities or not as prescribed. You also need to be aware of side effects from anxiety drugs, muscle relaxants, sleep aids, and stimulants. Mixing prescription drugs with other drugs or alcohol can be dangerous. If you take an Ambien with a glass of wine, it may be enough to stop you from breathing. Prescribed drugs can be just as dangerous as illegal drugs. Take medications only as directed.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue a lively conversation with Rory McShane. He's the CEO of McShane LLC, and I'm inviting you back right now. Civility in politics, is that just gone?
Yes. I wish there was a better way to say it, but yes. I mean, there's a professor right now in Virginia, Rachel Bitcoffer, I believe the name is, and she wrote a paper that she believes, and I actually largely agree with her, that the undecided voter is gone. And I've been actually arguing that for a long time.
Really?
There is no such thing as undecided voters anymore. There's no such thing as, no one is going to go into the ballot box this election cycle and honestly think to themselves, well, do I prefer Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump? Or do I prefer Michael Bloomberg or Donald Trump? There may be some people who think, I don't love Donald Trump, I'm going to stay home, or I don't love Michael Bloomberg, I'm going to stay home. But there's very few, if any, people who are truly undecided. American politics has become increasingly tribal, and people vote for the person who's going to defend their tribe the best, right? It's ideological. And when you have one sect, right, one tribe that thinks the other tribe is evil and vice versa, I think civility in politics is dead. When, I mean, you have celebrities who are doing videos about murdering the President of the United States, I think civility in politics is dead. And everyone who feels that they're in the Trump camp feels that that could just as easily be a paper mache mannequin of them.
Do you think that this administration has had an inability to push out the successes that they have had. Because, you know, obviously you and I know that there are 2 million people involved in the United States federal government. Mm-hmm. There are lots of things that happen every day, small and large, that are successes as well as the failures that mm-hmm. we see. And yet the administration seems to have a hard time pushing that out. And you've got about 30 seconds.
I disagree. I think they've had a hard time doing that on mainstream media. So what President Trump has done, quite uniquely, is he's created his own media platform, right? I mean, he has turned Facebook and Twitter, I mean, they now have a Trump TV show anchored by Laura Trump, right? And his supporters, the 40-some percent of Americans who are lock solid with him, don't tune into NBC to see what the administration is doing well. They go to the Facebook page, they go to the Twitter page, and they share that. And the information spreads wildly among his group of people, and of course not the people who don't support it.
All right, but the bottom line there is that he is therefore not reaching people that he needs to reach or would like to reach, which is to let the opposition know that, hey, we are getting some things done.
Doesn't need to. 2004, George W. Bush won re-election and lost more unaffiliated voters than he'd won in 2000, right? The middle in America is dying. The middle ground is dying. You don't go after undecided voters anymore. You find people who already agree with you, you register them, mobilize them, and turn them out. He needs to make sure that people who already agree with him are registered to vote and come out to vote. He doesn't need to try and fight over somebody who honestly is, you know, has to decide between him and Michael Bloomberg.
And we are out of time, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate
your time.
Nice to visit with you.
You as well.
And we'll be right back.
A bird's eye captures its surroundings at different heights. At Brian Culpa Photography, we can make your imagination soar over buildings, parks, cityscapes, and beyond. Brian's images tell the story and get the job done. If you need a new perspective to tell your story, contact Brian today. Brian Culpa Photography. Experience the bird's eye view at brianculpaphotography.com.
Penny! Dad? What are you learning? This place is great.
Huh?
You gotta try this. Wow! This stuff is great! People are gonna love it!
Yes. Yes, they were.
As you know, Reno is booming. Toll's development company is helping it grow with insightful design and development, building community with every project, adding beauty, adding excitement, emphasizing our shared humanity. Reno is becoming bigger. Toll's development is helping it become better, more livable, more enjoyable. To learn more, go to tollsdevelopment.com. tollsdevelopment.com.
Take a look at Pro Group Management and see how your workers' comp requirements can be met head-on. By taking a proactive approach, Pro Group can assure that your company is meeting or exceeding state and federal standards. As you move forward in your industry, Pro Group moves with you, simplifying regulatory tasks, clearing the way so you can get the job done, and look to your future success. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you.
You can now watch Nevada Newsmakers on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search for Nevada Newsmakers and become a subscriber. We'll see you on the next broadcast. Thanks for watching and listening.